With Egypt racked by internal turmoil, as the country's transitional military council appears determined to hold on to power, many in the West worry about the future of democracy there. Middle East expert Lawrence Pintack, dean of the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University, is currently visiting Indonesia. He covered that country's 1998 revolution, and he reflects on the lessons Indonesia holds for Egypt today.
We warned them about trusting the military. The topic of the conversation was Egypt, but the speaker was no anti-regime activist or Western human rights worker. I was sitting in the office of a top advisor to the Vice President of Indonesia, a country that knows a thing or two about generals and politics. Egypt's revolutionaries may, rightly, have little interest in advice from the West, but they're ignoring the lessons of history in countries with experiences similar to their own. The parallels between Indonesia and Egypt are striking. Each has a former general who ruled for three decades. Each has a military that propped up the regime and wove its tentacles into every corner of the economy. Both strongmen were ultimately unseated by an economic crisis that brought the masses into the streets. Dewi Fortuna Anwar, that vice presidential advisor, says the Egyptian she met at a series of meetings last year, as she puts it, idolized the army as guardians of the nation. Now, she says, we wonder whether Egypt will be Indonesia in 1966 or 1998. 1966 is a reference to the infamous Year of Living Dangerously, when a military civil society alliance brought down dictator Sukarno, only to have the generals replace him with one of their own, General Suharto, ushering in three decades of quasi-military rule. A popular uprising in 1998 led to Reformasi, when the military ultimately told Suharto, it's time to go, opening the way for presidential elections. By handing over power to his vice president instead of the military, Suharto may well have saved Indonesia from the crisis now gripping Egypt as the generals of SCAF, the Transitional Military Council, flail about trying to negotiate the unfamiliar shoals of politics and diplomacy. It's also worth pointing out that Suharto was allowed to quietly live out his final years. Some here think the spectacle of Mubarak on trial is counterproductive. Other senior officials worry that Egypt will go the way of Pakistan, with the military functioning as a parallel government. Indonesia's transition was not without trauma. For a few years, the country changed presidents, all civilians, like most people change underwear. But it's now settled into a flawed but functioning democracy. Corrupt officials are being jailed. Muslim political parties have been incorporated into the government without the imposition of Sharia law. And intra-religious clashes, common after Suharto's overthrow, are now the exception rather than the rule. That's not to say people aren't cynical. A recent survey shows that the president's political party, the most popular in the country, would win barely 13% of the vote if the election was held tomorrow. A critical difference between Indonesia and Egypt involves the structures of a free society. Mubarak banned most think tanks. In Indonesia, civil society flourished during the Suharto era, allowing the intelligentsia to create a blueprint for the post-Suharto years. It was a blueprint that compartmentalized the military. But that doesn't mean the soldiers are locked in their barracks. Indonesia's current president is an ex-general, and the man with the best shot at winning the 2014 presidential election is another ex-officer. He also happens to be Suharto's son-in-law. Indonesia's generals may not have been the midwife of democracy, but they were among those attending at the birth, and they're still part of the political landscape 14 years later because they've earned their place through the ballot box. Another lesson for Egypt. In Jakarta, I'm Lawrence Pintack.